It appears that there's those of you that are streaming or seeing this recorded. There's only two people, in the students in the room, so we're a bit confused. The lecture will go on anyways, regardless how many people in the room, but because a lot of the students, almost more than two-thirds of the students, are off campus. Yeah, so we have 6 minutes. But I started recording at 1. Can you go up and see if it's working? Go into forelesning.hague.no. Because we've had a lot of. Hello. Is it testing? The 6 minutes, yeah. Now, you can get this in the library, so I would do it. I mean, this is the textbook you have to read, and it's just basically a traditional textbook. So it's reading and not falling asleep. But there's a lot of facts in it. It's not needed. It's not a bad idea. We can say, as you know, I'm a bit open to different discussions. You're allowed right now to give an example of the security incident we're going to analyze in the exam. So last year in the exam, I had information about Heartbleed. So the students had to do a social technical analysis of the Heartbleed vulnerability. And what I did there is that, you know, I gave them online information, and I told them ahead of time that it would be on Heartbleed. So you can go up and read up about that. And in a sense, I'm just, if you come with an example of an incident in Norwegian, Swedish, or international press, you know, I could use it. And then you have the advantage of knowing what the incident is ahead of time. If you don't find it, I will find one. If I don't find someone good, you're going to have to do Heartbleed again. I will put this on mute until we start the lecture. Test. Thank you. So I would like to start the lecture. It's quarter after, and I know there are some people online. This is being streamed and recorded on backup. I don't know how many times we've lied on the backup. It's far too often. This is the fourth lecture in the course ISO Social Technical Security and Risk Analysis. The last lecture, for those taking the course 410, was on innovation, which is not part of their exercise. This is for the 4152 students. Today's lecture, we're going to be going through some administration. Then we're going to do some recap. And in the recap and the lecture, you're going to have to do some exercises in here. So you have some teaching learning activities where you have the group discussed. Again, most of the lectures are to help you prepare for the exam. And at the end of this, we discuss some of the exam questions. This is being recorded, and we've had some problem with the uploading to Fronter with the sound recordings, so I'm going to divide it up into hour sections so I don't keep breaking size limits. And someone's going to have to remind me that I'm going to book the next session. We see how it goes. So I booked now until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, I think. Yes, I book now until 2 o'clock, and then we take a break and we book again at 14:10. And then after the 14:10 one, I see how that goes, and I book another one. Administration issues. So I believe everybody here is in a group. Yes? Have you gotten an answer back from Sheldon? We have one individual that's not in a group yet. I'm still giving time for them to be part of it. We see what happens. Those that are coming late, right now the ad hoc decision was that they will have to do extra work. But I would like to get this. If you remember, the assignment is due what date for the first half? When? The 11th. So it's actually due on Monday. Okay? That's the first stage. The second half of the assignment is an individual assignment. So that's a group assignment. And this is 50% of your mark in the course. You'll be doing black hat / white hat. And that's why I'm going to allow you to decide on the innovation that you participated in. It's due on the 15th of June at 23:59. It should be between 5 and 6 pages with references. It can be a white hat, black hat, and it's a social technical analysis. This is Google Glass service. That's incorrect. This is the wrong slide. This is the wrong slide. Do I have the wrong version up? One second, sorry. I have to jump to. Slide 4, PA4. I see why I didn't PA3 then. Okay, I'm going to have to. You're going to have a PA5 version. That means if you haven't picked it up yet, PA1 is the first version, PA2 is the second version, and I'm up to PA4 now. And the slide that you will get will be an A version. So this is version PA, preliminary version A1, preliminary version A2, preliminary version A4, etc. And then when it's final, it's an A. And then if you went to a B1, the next one would be PB1. B1. But this is explaining the black hat exercise. I wanted to explain the white hat exercise. So what the black hat exercise is that you're being hired by a criminal organization to do attacks on the service. Now, I didn't say do illegal attacks. It's to do attacks on the service. In many cases, when people design systems where they don't think about security, you can actually get away with doing things legally that the developer didn't think about. Right? And you can use a social technical analysis to analyze that. 9 times out of 10, when you're doing that type and doing it legally, of course, there's no laws against it. Because the law, as we taught in this course, is always behind the technology. So you develop a good example about law being behind the technology. Drones with cameras on them. Are you violating privacy rights or not? If the camera is this over your house. That's an example of how technology and laws don't keep up. The white hat analysis is more that you have a customer and you're trying to figure out what the important assets of the customer are. You have to help them with that, and then how they should protect them, and then whether it's worth the cost. Because every different customer will have a different risk appetite. I'm going to the board now. I hope the board should be able to see from the screen or not, really. Does anybody, how's it look? Tell me if it. Let's say there was no security. This is zero for the product. That means you're taking a certain level of risk. The idea is as you increase the security controls and the mechanisms, you're cutting down your risk level. Now, it can be that the customer is willing to accept a certain risk security level and a certain risk level. So your job as a security consultant is to help them figure this out. Because as you add more security, hopefully you're taking down the risk. Otherwise, security is not a value add. Okay. Any questions on black hat, white hat? So review in the course. This is a diagram that I wrote in the beginning of the course when it came to this concept of social technical. And it's a Cartesian type coordinate system, which saying that to deal with the security problem, you need to understand some theory and you need to be familiar with practices. The other thing you have to be familiar with is you have to be familiar with, in this case, computer security. Or, as they say, information technology. So that's another diagram. So this is different levels, 1, 2. Now, the goal of computer systems, one, in some cases, is to protect the computer, but that's if the computer is considered a, correct. And 9 times out of 10 in a computer system today, the computer is worth 10%, but the information. Is the asset you want to protect. And there's an area of research called information systems. So far in this course, in lecture one, I'm suggesting that we started about here. And why did I suggest it has to do with practice more than theory? If you remember in lecture one, I was talking about how I approached studying the computer security problem and why social technical came out. And it was because I was a police officer. And I wanted to look how computer crimes were being committed. So instead of studying theoretical security models, the first thing you see is I looked at actual computer crimes and said, this is a computer crime. It was committed using this technique or this technology or the lack of this technology. So that's lecture one. Then in lecture two, I got into more theory when it came to criminology, etc. How do you classify these things? In lecture three, we talked about systems theory. And finally, today's lecture, lecture four, is here. Say this, then we get, I talk later about this textbook. It's a good practical textbook. The ones who wrote this textbook are practitioners. They know what they're doing in terms of security practices. Okay, so I want, in terms of lecture 3, 2, and 1, etc., I'm going to give you some tests now. This is a slide from lecture 1. And I talked about the need, when you're working with security, to have the right mental model of the system. And this was at the high level. And I gave you this model. So on the top right-hand corner, I have blank, blank, blank system. Can anybody tell me what word I should put fill in the blanks with? Remember, we're modeling system at the simplest element. Any computer system can be divided any social into a social technical system that can be modeled in different systems. And there are three types of systems. This is actually from chapter one. This is page four in chapter one. Okay, good. And what we mean by legal system is the living system. It is humans that commit crimes. The right one was an abstract system. The bottom one was the opposite of abstract, which is very hard. Yes, concrete. So anytime you're thinking about doing a consultancy in security, you have this simple mental model in your mind. The customer system has a living system. There's an abstract system to it, and there's a concrete system. Now, the diagram on the right is an abstract system model of different layers in computing. You have the digital logical layer. You have the microprogramming layer. The conventional machine level, operating system level, assembly language level, programming oriented language level. If you're going to attack a system, you have to figure out what level is the easiest one to attack. First abstractly, and then concretely. Concretely, you're seeing chips which represent AND gates. So think about social technical systems as being living systems interacting with abstract systems and concrete systems. They have abstract assets. They have concrete assets. And last and most importantly, they have living system assets. Your first job as a fireman is to protect life. First job as a police officer is to protect life, not property. Right? So living systems is an asset. This is the customer. This is the black hat. Same thing. He has an abstract system. He has a concrete system. He will use these systems to attack this system, or that system. When you're designing security, you have to figure out the balance between the attacker, in this case, the defender. So that's the first system model, right? That's the mental model that you should keep with you your whole life as a consultant or a security expert. You have a living system, an abstract system, and concrete system. This is from chapter 6. It's a modeling of how I went from academically, when you're looking at the information security problem, from a research perspective, you have two basic approaches. One was a naive inductivist. The other was a sophisticated falsificationist. In this diagram here, you see in that article, you see how the Orange Book, the TCSEC, and the ITSEC, these are security, hypothetical security models of operating system security that have been studied, approved, and used over the last 20 years. So when the experts go in at the Department of Defense, they say that this system has level secret. That means it has to use a B1 operating system. That's a theoretical assumption. They are being sophisticated falsificationist. If you read the article, what I did is I took the computer crimes that were committed and I asked what question. I was taking a naive inductivist approach and went to sophisticated falsifications. I said, all right, if you had had a B1 operating system that had this theoretical model, would the crime have been committed? So going back to that diagram here now that I started off with, the simple mathematical diagram of risk security. We have security that has been defined as a B1 level of security. A B1 operating system in 1998 for Unix costs $2,000 per CPU license. An off-the-shelf operating system that wasn't certified for B1 cost $1,000. Different system, different cost. So we say this is the uncertified product. It has certain levels of security. We'll say it can deal with a certain level of risk. This is risk one. Ideally, if you're going to have a B1 system, you should be dealing with risk level two. Again, what we're doing is we're taking an abstract model of security and applying to reality. That's what's talked about in chapter 6. Now, what's interesting in chapter 6 that we'll be going through in this book is the types of attack. So you see here in the middle, we have this ideal typology of different types of attack. Trojan horses, misuse of authority, browsing, false data entry. And what I did in the study and what you can read about is how I used, I said, all right, if there was a trap door in the system, would you have detected it at a B1 level? This is something about lecture 3 now. So what I've done so far, I've taken slides from lecture 1, lecture 2, and lecture 3. This is a lecture 3 slide that's very abstract again. So we're going at higher levels of abstraction. And in this, we're talking about different ways of modeling a system. Now, for those of you doing the assignment, you realize that a lot of the people who developing the product didn't have a system perspective. They said that our product is going to do X, but they hadn't thought about the system above or the system below. When you're doing security, you have to think about the whole system. But this can go on forever. The other one that you probably saw is that when you're coming into the security problem, you have to model the system simply first. What system theory tells us, and in terms of open systems, is you can model a system using this. The simplest model is the IPO model. So your security controls, be they social or technical, they have input controls, processing controls, and output controls. So all systems, regardless whether the security systems or living systems, have these simple processes. So when you're analyzing a social technical system, what are the inputs? What are the processes? What are the outputs? Now, the toughest thing in the system, as you saw before, is to define where the system boundaries are. In terms of systems theory, we say the boundaries, the difference between the boundaries of the system and the environment is the degree of control. So in this case here, you see that you have employees in your company. They have a diagram that says labor. The box is shaded to indicate that in reality, you can only control so much of your labor's mistakes, intentional mistakes or unintentional mistakes. So you have a level of control. So the amount you can control something, that determines whether it's part of the system or not. So when you're attacking a system, the three lessons are that you use a simple model, abstract, concrete living. There are different layers to the system, and the different principles of how you model a system. The simple one is input, processing, output. And then it's very important to get the system in focus to define where the boundaries of the system are. Any questions on chapters 1, 2, and 3? Remember, when you're reading the material, always think from a security perspective. What do we mean by security perspective? Can it help us understand the system, explain the system, influence the system, predict how the system's going to behave, and control the system? And usually modeling goes in that order. You model to understand, explain, predict, and control. I'm going to use this here. So we have 15 more minutes. So I'll go to this textbook now. Chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 13, 14, 16, 19. What that means is that on the exam you will have at least two of those chapters will have a question. What's very good about it is that the concrete approach. It deals with concrete security management issues, and it has tons of checklists. Checklists are good, but one, they're hard to teach. Two, and why are they hard to teach? Because I can just sit here and read up a bunch of checklists, and that's your job. But your job is to think how these checklists will help you. And what they do in the book, which is good, is they expand the checklist one chapter after another. So as you read the book sequentially, they add more things you need to check when you're looking at a security system. These checklists were built up over years when security had different backgrounds. And to understand our security problems today and explain them, we need to have a bit of history. Security beforehand was called, it was used to be called EDP security. And EDP stands for Electronic Data Processing Security. Remember, these computers were electronic data processing machines. Then later on, when it came to information systems more, it was called Management Information Systems, MIS. And here we were looking at protecting more, as the name sounds, abstract assets rather than concrete assets. So it started off beforehand, you were protecting the electronic data, the way it was processed. Going back to, we used the word process, that was input, processing, output. So it was called EDP, the process. Very concrete. Then we start moving up to information. Which is another level of abstraction. So we're getting more and more abstract. Then they call it ICT, Information Technology, Information Communication Technology Security. So you're not only protecting the data processing, you're protecting how this is communicated. With EDP security, the situation was that you had a huge computer center and it was centralized. So you used to have physical protection around the building. If you wanted to submit a program, you walked to a booth, handed the cards over to a guy in a white coat. He put in the reader, and he had output. So the system was easy to protect, is that you had sort of the physical computer. And so what a lot of the concentration was around was about that perimeter, because that was the boundary of the system. As the communication technology came in, you had a company that was called Sun before. I don't know how many people, they're the ones that helped invent Java. They had an expression in the 90s, was that the network is the computer. So computation became, the computer was out in the network. With that, one of the problems was is that the responsibilities for the information became a bit diverse, and the accountability. I give you a good example. As I say, I started off in 86 in this, working in this field. I was the security manager for a bank, a small bank, and I would produce streams of output on paper that would go to the bank manager about all the different accounts. And I say streams, I'm talking about piles like that. And the responsibility, accountability, and ownership, what the bank manager said to me was, is that since your department prints out the paper, you own it. So I had to have staff sitting there shredding the paper. That was on my budget. The other aspect is interesting about security. They talk about the papers that security has to be defined. What is the mental, what does security mean? When it came to information security, one example here is what we used to say when I worked at Ericsson as security manager, is security is being free from unaccepted risk. The point was is that in businesses, I go back to that diagram, you see here the model, the mathematical model, is what is security equal? Is risk is equal to the known and unknown social technical controls over the known and unknown social technical attacks. And the point, in this case, we didn't say unknown, is that if you accepted the risk in an organization, then it was dealt with. And that's what the ISO standard talks about when it comes to ISO 2701. We go into this in this book. So, in the book, they start off in chapter one using a lot of terminologies. They talk about accountability, audibility, assets, attacks, authentications, availability. And your job in terms of this course is to know those terms as a professional, at least for this exam. So can you... What is so important about accountability? What is accountability? What is non-repudiation? Anybody here can tell me what non-repudiation is? These are all terms you have to know. And that's so you, if someone said to you, we have to have accountability controls, what is the way that we usually do accountability controls? We have logs. Where are the logs? In order for accountability's controls to work, what is the other type of control that you need? It's up there, in a sense. If I have a lousy access control system, you can't establish who did what. If your authentication system is crap, your log system is crap. Okay? It has to be traceable. It has to be lined between them. You have to look at holistically. And that's something, going back to the social technical systems, you see that is that, we'll get into this, is that you have a bunch of security functionality, access control, authentication. And what is the difference between authentication and access control? One is saying who you are, the other is saying what you can do. Okay? Same thing there. If I have good authentication, but lousy access control. So, I mean, can person X read, write, execute the program? So now we're getting down to the nuts and bolts of practical security management, right? Going back to the product, Quest, Jim. Does the person have the right to change the thing? Do they have access control? Does the operating system have the right to change? Does the application have the right to change? So they have this issue in the chapter 2. They talk about, and everybody knows what confidentiality, integrity, and availability is. And that's in relation to the assets. Confidentiality of the assets, the integrity of the asset, and the availability asset. Now, you see, I'm putting in the slides, I'm putting in a lot of questions. And these are notes for myself to ask the question, but these are also notes for you to think about the exam. So when you're reading, I just don't want you to read it. I want you to figure out how should we reflect on this. In the CIA triad, is there any security measures that go against each other? So is the dichotomy between being confidential and available? Right? If something is... But can you have the situation where you have high confidentiality, low availability, high confidentiality, high availability, right? This is high. Now, I said contradictions. Can it be that confidentiality mechanisms can, from a social technical perspective, hurt availability? Can confidentiality go against availability? All right, so access control, authentication, and availability. How do they sort of contradict each other? How can they work against each other? What is denial of service attack? What's a good way to do a denial of service attack on your phone right now? Using the authentication mechanism. How many here know can get the puk right away? Right. So when you're thinking as a social technical analyst, you have to see the balance. Every time you have some sort of control, there are weaknesses that it creates. They create a threat. Right? And your job is to manage that balance. Now, in systems theory, when you read that chapter on systems theory, what do we describe as balance in living systems? How do living systems maintain balance? How do biological systems maintain balance? It is called homeostasis. So, this diagram here, it's trying to put it all together using a type of universal markup language. You start off by looking, you have an asset, and you have a threat agent. And you have an owner. So you have owners, you start off with the owners, they have assets, and they have enemies. The owner values the asset, and because they value the asset, they need to create what? Countermeasures against the threat agent. Interesting enough, these countermeasures, they both reduce the risk, but they also imply certain vulnerabilities. So just as I pointed out that confidentiality countermeasures can reduce the risk, it can increase your vulnerability of denial of service attack. That all depends on whether the threat agent can use the threats to increase the risk. So this diagram basically sums up threats, threat agents, utility, and vulnerability. You should be able to produce this diagram in your sleep. And the relationships between them. So, let's just start off basically, and you should be working on this, but we have an owner, he values an asset. Because he values the asset, wishes to minimize the risk of that asset, he then imposes countermeasures to reduce the risk. These countermeasures may reduce the risk, but they also possess vulnerabilities. For example, the access control mechanism on your phone produces a vulnerability of easy denial of service attack. So that vulnerability led to another risk. So every time you solve one problem, you might create two. But as long as that problem is not perceived as a likely threat scenario to the threat agent, then it's okay. Gonna have to take a break soon, I think. Yes, the recording stops in 1 minute and then starts in 10. So what I want you to do is take a group break here now. This is the slide. You can look at it. You can do it as one big group. Don't worry about it. But I want you to come back. I'm going to come back in 10 minutes or 15 minutes.